the worldwide shortage of helicopter pilots. One man's quest to turn that around. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Dennis Kenyon. I had the chance to meet Dennis briefly at a rotorcraft meet, which was held at West Desert Air Park in Utah over last weekend. I had hoped to interview Dennis. Unfortunately, the weekend ended a little bit differently than planned, and Dennis had a praying in a helicopter, and I didn't end up getting a chance to talk to him. So I've tracked him down in England. He's back home now, and we have him on the phone. Dennis, thanks very much for taking a few minutes out for our listeners today.
That's fine. Thank you, Paul.
Let me start out by asking you about your career, because anytime I talk to somebody who does aerobatics and helicopters, I have to wonder if there was, maybe a little bit too much carbon monoxide at some time in your life or something that...
About carbon monoxide, probably a lot of anoxia. I went to the RAF's college to learn to fly. I stayed in the RAF about 18 years. I flew the fast jets and the bombers for a time. And then I came out in 1970, and I met a guy who wanted me to join him in his business with helicopters. And so one thing led to another. I converted over to helicopters, and I ran my own public transport business, and I had a flying training school, and that's what I've done for the last 30 years.
Is it safe to say that a helicopter would not be someone's most intuitive choice if they wanted to go into the business of aerobatics?
I think that's right. What happens is it works the other way around, that without doubt, helicopter flying is more charismatic, it's more satisfying, certainly a lot more fun. I wouldn't say it's more rewarding. It's a very interesting, intriguing form of flying, and most fixed-wing pilots get drawn to it at some time or other. It's very recently, in aviation terms, that any form of aerobatics, and we don't call it that really, it's freestyle or demonstration or display flying, but it's only in the last 30 years that anyone's done anything other than fly straight and level in helicopters. In fact, the first guy I ever saw to do it was an American. It was an American who taught me the display routines.
People come to an air show with preconceived notions of what a helicopter can do. To some extent, it seems as though display flying in a helicopter plays on these and attempts to startle people out of their preconceived notions about what helicopters can do.
That's exactly right. No one expects to see a helicopter perform any unusual maneuvers. And as I said, 30 years ago, they never did. The first person I ever saw do anything unusual was the chief test pilot of the Enstrom helicopter factory up at Menominee in Michigan. And my boss took me over there to take on an agency, in fact, a distributorship for Europe for the Enstrom helicopter. I saw a chap called Mike Meager, who, God bless him, is no longer with us now, perform a similar sort of routine that I do to this day. And my boss said, do you think you could do that? Because it's obviously helping us with sales. And being an ex-fixed-wing aerobatic pilot, I went for it. And I did my first public display in 1974 at the British International Farmer Exhibition. And it had a dramatic positive effect on sales, and so we kept doing it.
Well, how do you start out learning about helicopter aerobatics? Who was your teacher?
Well, that was the same man, the Mike Meager. It's a bit different to fixed wing in that there are well-worn paths, learning paths for the different maneuvers. I don't know of one anywhere in the world that is a manual for helicopter maneuvers like that. And it's rather odd, actually, that I've been asked so many times, as everyone knows I'm retiring, everyone's been asking me if I would produce a manual to hand on the ideas, and I did in fact start to do it. I'm having second thoughts now in view of what happened last weekend at the display there. It does dent one's confidence rather.
Well, it certainly doesn't diminish your record in terms of performing aerobatics. You've had, in addition to having over 1,200 incident-free performances up to that point, I was looking at your bio notes here, and you've done considerable amount of movie work. Tell us a little bit about what that was like and how you got onto that kind of work.
The displays, yes, I think the one at West Desert would have been the 1,216th in about a 34-year period. And God bless, it had been accident-free up to that point. But I suppose the longer you do it, the more likely you have an accident. What was the second part? The question?
The movie work. How did you get involved in
that? Oh, yeah, sure. I started that off in about the 70s, doing commercials, just as a charter. People wanted a helicopter, and I would turn up. We did them, makeup for face cream, double glazing, all those sort of things. And the first feature film I got was a thing called Rollerball, the first Rollerball, not the second, which was a British film. I then did a Bavarian one, Magellan 2000. I did one of the Bond films. I did Spy Who Loved Me and GoldenEye. The last one, and I haven't done one since, was the Black Hawk Down film, which was great fun. Ridley Scott, so another British production. Jerry Bruckheimer was the American end of it, and the director was Ridley Scott, the Brit. Great fun. I really enjoyed it, and it's rewarding, and it's tremendous fun to fly.
Now, did they come to you because of your reputation for display flying at that point?
In the old days, no. I think Black Hawk got me because of that. I'd been doing freestyle flying or aerobatic flying, but didn't come directly from Ridley Scott. It came from another pilot who was asked to do it and had to duck out at the last minute. He called me because he knew of my experience and said, would you do it? So because I jumped in with both feet. Of course, that was filmed in Morocco.
Well, let me ask you how you moved to do the DVD. I've read the liner notes, and it says that this was an end-of-the-day airport bar inspiration among three friends that turned into this DVD.
That's exactly right. I think it was four of us there, certainly three, and two of them were ex-pupils of mine. I wanted to run this scholarship to put something back into the industry. It's been very good to me over the years, and I wanted to, as I approached retirement, put something back, and we kicked the idea around, and I really don't know who suggested it, but one of them said, look, let's do a DVD. We've got loads of footage of your displays. Let's put them all together, get a few other pilots together, and we are a bunch of amateurs, but I don't know if you've seen the result. Most people think it's fairly professional for what it is. And the girl that did the voiceover had never done it before at all. In fact, she was a receptionist in my business, and she had a lovely voice, and I'm not a voice coach, but we gave her some voice coaching, and she produced the words that she has. And we use the proceeds of that DVD sale to sponsor the scholarship, or to pay for the scholarship each year. I've been running it now for about 4 years. And we do have, in America, we have a distributor, a chap called Ron Spiker, and he handles the sales for us on the NTSC sales for America, and he's doing very well.
Well,
so I thought the idea of me going over to Utah, it's a long way to go to do one display, but the idea was to publicise the DVD and give our US sales agent a bit of a leg up and see if we could promote the sales more. So that was the thinking behind it, apart from I love doing that sort of thing anyway.
Well, it certainly did get some attention. But
that's all I wanted for.
let me ask you about the helicopters that appear in the video, because you have quite a mix, everything from small instruments, Sikorskis, up to a Chinook.
That's right, yes. I think, I'm guessing now, I'm a bit out of touch, but I think seven displays are on there, and I think I did five of them. What prompted it was, I think to this day, nobody has produced a dedicated DVD purely for display flying. And ours was was probably the first. There may have been others I don't know about. And the idea was just all youngsters love to see it. And, of course, and it does sell quite well. We sold 3,000 or 4,000 in this country and getting on for 1,000 in America, perhaps. As I'm retired now, I've got more time. So what I'm looking to do is to find agents in other countries who might take on the agency for us. And we want them to make a profit out of it. If we get £10 back per DVD, and it usually retails at something like £20, we make a good profit for the scholarship, and the retailer does quite well too.
Dennis, we need to take a break for a moment. When we come back, I want to talk more about the scholarship and how it's administered. Dennis Kenyon is my guest. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. actually thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking today with Dennis Kenyon, who is a British helicopter display pilot and administers a scholarship that helps young people get started in professional helicopter flying. Dennis, tell us how the scholarship fund is administered. How is that set up?
I'm the chairman. We have a committee. I'm a chairman but non-voting. It consists of the airport manager of my local airfield, a lovely lady who flies her own Augusta 109 and Jet Ranger. So he's the female element. We have an airshow commentator who's very well known throughout England, and one other pilot. And the plan is that we used to advertise, I don't need to now, we get something like 4,000 applications. The youngsters have to be aged between 18 and 23. We get 3,000 or 4,000 applications. I just sift out the no-hopers, airline pilots and people who just want to cash in, until we get down to the genuine applicants. We all meet together, break them up, break them up to four, and each of us has to turn up with six that we want to interview. So if there's four of us, that means 24 we call up for interview. We interview them, and then we try to knock that down to six, re-interview, and somebody wins the scholarship. The girl that won it last year was a young lady called Georgie Dixon, and she has got about another 5 or 6 hours to go to get her license, and because of my being away, we haven't completed it yet, but I'll be doing that next month or so.
Well, now, if you are retiring from the flight instruction business, I would assume that your hard costs for getting someone from zero to a helicopter private pilot's license are going to go up in the next year.
Yes, that is a problem, of course. When I was doing it, I was doing it on my own machine. I didn't obviously charge my own time. All we had was the airfield cost, the maintenance cost, and the fixed cost of the machine and the fuel. Now what I'm planning to do, I shall finish Georgie this year, the balance of this year, and then the idea will have to be that we put the contract out to a school each year. I think what we'll do, and I haven't really gone firm on it, but once we know who's won it and their location in England or wherever they happen to be, we'll approach several local schools and get them to bid, say, 450 hours flying. But it will put the cost up significantly, which is one of the reasons I've been looking for a sponsor.
Well, there are projections out there. I know Boeing and Airbus have both quoted studies which say that in the next 20 years, we're going to need an average of 17,000 to 18,000 new pilot starts per year in order just to take care of the demand coming within the industry. And I've also seen figures that say within the next decade, the size of the aviation industry will double. How are we going to get enough helicopter pilots in particular and pilots of all powered certificates in general into the system? What is missing? Why are we not getting the number of people we used to?
Well, those fixed-wing figures are dead on. I know they are correct, and that is it's reflected in this country where at long last the airlines, the British Airways and those and the Virgin Airways are just waking up to the fact that we are going to be short of the fixed-wing pilots, but they have got the wherewithal to set up schools, and they have done, and they take on sometimes ab initio people, or they just up their marketing and bullying existing pilots. I don't want to be rotten to my own helicopter industry, but we are very backward in that. We don't see the tank till it's run over us. And as you just said, that same shortage that's existing in the airline and the fixed-wing business is happening to helicopter pilots. I would think, and I'm not an expert to do any research on it, but I can see that in the next 3, 4, 5 years, there's going to be a dramatic shortage of rotary pilots, and nobody at the moment is doing anything about it other in England than Bond Helicopters. They're the only firm that are recruiting right now, looking ahead. So it's a bit sad, really, but if I were, and I'm not in the biggest industry, but I would be doing something about it now. What I'm doing isn't in any way reflecting on that, other than it would put a few more pilots in the pot, but it's not the right numbers.
I think that when you get down to the causes of the shortage, it seems to me that for some reason, young people today are not drawn to flying machines the way they were in the past. Is there just too much competition from other interesting technology?
I think that may well be so. I'd have to say that the people that approach me in a very small way, bear in mind I'm a one-man business, or I was a very small business anyway, the people that approach me are probably, I won't say they're not typical, but they're not in the large numbers. I would think in the larger population of youngsters, yes, you're so right, there are so many alternatives and so many more profitable businesses and careers. For some reason, the helicopter pay structure isn't that good. The job satisfaction is 1,001%, but the pay doesn't go with it. So I think the helicopter side of the industry has to attract people who are just dedicated to the job, not so much to the pay.
Well,
that's going to have to change in my view, but then I'm not in that end of the industry.
I was going to say the law of supply, demand, and price seems to dictate that helicopter pilot pay, like pay for all pilots, at some point in the next few years, will have to go up just from market forces.
Well, that's really it, I suppose. When the demand is there, then people will just have to pay more to get what they want. I can't talk globally because I have some international experience, but it's not enough to talk about. But certainly in the United Kingdom, as an employer, and I have had several AOC public transport businesses, I've seen the demand go up and down. I can recall the times when I would advertise, the phone would ring, and I would simply say to the guy, "Do you have a professional license? Good, get your bum here, and I will do convert you and give them jobs." And I used to give jobs on the phone. That isn't the situation we've got at the moment, because I think the North Sea in this country, the offshore business, is sucked up an awful lot of the pilots. But that is a very small. To this day in England, there are only 30,000 pilots, and that's not helicopter pilots, that's all pilots. I think you've got 500,000 in the States. So it's a very small business, and small fluctuations can change it dramatically. If there are 50 pilots in England looking for a job, and some new operation comes up that wants 100, we've got a dramatic shortage, of course, just overnight.
Well, and I don't know how it works in the UK, but I know here in the US that if you want to get a job as a professional helicopter pilot, those jobs tend to start off at 1,000 hours of logged flight experience because of the insurance requirements.
That's exactly right. I didn't realize that. I suspected something like that was going on, but it wasn't until this trip to Utah that I met two or three nice young pilots, all got 600, 700, 800 hours, and they all said exactly what you have just said. I cannot get a job till I have 1,000 hours. I could only say that really points at the deficiencies of our own industry. What you're interested in is a guy that can do the job. And when I had my AOC, I was doing power line work, pipeline inspections, film work, and I used to employ many pilots, and aerial photography, we did a lot of that. I used to employ a pilot based on him having certainly the qualifications, a reasonable amount of experience, but I didn't put any definite benchmark on it, and I would fly with the guy. And if he handled properly, I considered him safe. We used to offer jobs. But that doesn't seem to work in the States, and I think it's driven by the insurance company. Now, I've got to say, and I don't want to be shot down in flames by the insurance companies, but I haven't met too many insurance people that really know how to assess the risk. They just take the numbers up. And in fact, it's a wrong time to talk about it, but at the Utah display, I did talk to the guy that was insuring my machine. And he said just that. He said, "I took your risk, Dennis, because I looked at your record, and I tend to judge more individually." But and not an awful lot of that goes on. I think, generally speaking, it's too easy for them to tick the boxes, 1,000 hours, and that's it. So that's the easy way out, but that could easily change if there's a dramatic shortage. They'll have to start looking at parts that can do the job, as opposed to ones that simply have 1,000 hours.
Well, and they'll have to pay higher insurance premiums if that's what it takes to employ pilots with fewer hours.
Well, that's what it takes. In England, even though it's expensive compared with America, we still don't charge enough. Businesses still get young, small businesses, not the bigger ones, albeit some of the bigger ones do, are still going out of business because they aren't charging the right rate.
Well, Dennis, listen, we would certainly hope that if we could see you over here again at some point, just to even sit on the porch and talk about helicopters.
I'd love to do that. In fact, it may be a year away, but the organizer of the Utah show said he'd love me to come back, and I would, if I get the invite, I'll certainly make a point of going back. I love traveling. I love talking, particularly America. I travel to America a fair bit. I used to anyway when I was buying helicopters over there. I love being in America. I love the country. If I get the opportunity to go back, I should certainly take it.
Well, take things easy the next few days and
I'm doing that.
get over the stiffness, and we'll look forward to talking to you again in the future. And good luck with the scholarship. And we'll post a link on our website that takes them to where they can find more information on yours.
Yes, just in closing, if I may get the soundbite in.
Sure.
If there was anyone, any of the majors, who could see some opportunity, some business advertising opportunity in linking up with me in the scholarship in any way that they wanted, because I don't want my name promoted particularly. If anybody saw something, who's got an overseas branch, mainly this time in England or Europe, just please talk to me. And I think there's a possibility of advertising. It may not be big enough to meet the sort of people we're looking for, but you know, there's the plug anyway.
All right. Well, that plug is welcome. And what is the best website to go to for information on the scholarship?
My website covers the scholarship, and it's, apart from the three W's we don't need now, it's Dennis with two N's. Dennis R for Romeo. Kenyon, K-E-N-Y-O-N. So it reads DennisRKenyon@AOL.com.
All right. We'll put him onto that email address. And Dennis, thanks very much again for taking some time with us today.
Paul, thanks ever so much for your conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
My guest has been Dennis Kenyon, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero, that's AERO-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.